We're beginning a new series, and it's called Halachic Responses to Migration. This is based on a course I've been taking with a professor, Yonatan Cohen, at Graz College. And in this series, we'll explore various Jewish challenges and changes, both big and small, especially those related to migration. Using response literature, we'll study what the texts say in their own time and also look beyond them to see what ideas and values influence how decisions were made. We'll ask, how did Jews throughout history deal with their homes that were being forced to move? How did religious leaders adjust to both the difficulties and opportunities that migration brought? And what motivated their responses? And how do we tease out history from halakhic writings? Now, response literature is very specific. Sometimes it's very detailed and it cannot be extrapolated to broader cases. There are some tshuvos, some responses. There are theoretical questions, like Truman Sadeshin came up with a whole bunch of theoretical questions, but for the most part, tshuvos are very specific questions that deal with very specific circumstances. Dr. Chaim Soloveitchik, in his seminal essay, Rupture and Reconstruction, writes, there was, however, little chance that the old ways would be preserved by the surviving remnant, the relatives and neighbors of those who perished, who earlier had embarked for Israel and for American Israel. These massive waves of migration had wrenched these people suddenly from a familiar life and an accustomed environment and thrust into this strange country where even stranger manners prevailed. Simple conformity to habitual patterns could not be adequate for problems of life were now new and different. He describes how migration is rupture, that a new situation in life disturbs the old practices. And for this introductory shiur, we're going to discuss just an example of how this issue of migration brings rupture and brings concern of disruption of old practices. And we'll begin with a tshuva by Rav Shimon ben Tzemach Duran, who was born in 1361, died 1444. He's called the Tashbetz. He has these tshuvos. The toughest Tashbetz is the tshuvos of Shimon ben Tzemach. He was born in Mallorca, and he died in Algiers. Now, why does someone born in Mallorca end up in Algiers? So in 1391, riots began in Iberia, in the Iberian Peninsula, and it eliminated, some say, one-third, some say 40 to 50% of Iberian Jews. Some were killed, some left, and a strong majority converted. Never before had so many Jews converted on such a massive scale. Some Jews, like Rav Yitzchak ben Sheshet Perfet, the Rivash, managed to escape to North Africa. The Tashbetz escaped from Mallorca, which is a Spanish island on the Mediterranean Sea, about 110 miles off the coast of Spain. And he came to Algiers. And there was trade between Mallorca and North Africa. The question that he was asked is Chelek Aleph, Simon Nunzai, and it was from Oran, which is a town in Algiers, Aydei HaSocher of Chaim Susan. So it was from a merchant named Chaim Sasson. And he asked the question, Mahu lomar kiddush hayom al yayin simukim? Are you allowed to make kiddush over raisin wine? And he said, Va'amarta ki yesh moreh echad etzelchem shehor le'esor. And apparently there was a teacher, there was an individual who said it was forbidden. Now, the Tashbetz says, tshuva, davar pashut hu, it's a simple matter, shu kasher l'kiddush lav d'alav, v'ein tzarech lomar shomim alav, birkas ha-mazon, baruch alav, bor pri agafen. It can be used for kiddush, for avdala, and certainly for benching, and you recite bor pri agafen, and he brings a proof from Maseches Bava Kama, daf tzadi zayin amud aleph, and he says, omar zutra, omar rabbi zutra, bar tuvi, omar rav. The Rav says, "Ain omrim kiddush yom el al yain haror lenasech al gabei hamizbeach." That you can only make kiddush on wine that would be kosher if it was used as a wine libation on the mizbeach. And the Gemara first thinks maybe this excludes wine from a wine press immediately. And we say, "No, it's not the case. It is kosher." And then it says, "Maybe it comes to exclude yain sheltzi mukim. Maybe it comes to exclude raisin wine." But Tani Rav Chia lo yavim hevi kosher. Rav Chia said, b'di'eved, it's acceptable if you use raisin wine for a wine libation, so it's kosher. So open and shut case. Can you use raisin wine for kiddush? You can. And yet, the Tashbetz doesn't end the tshuva there. He's trying to bother, he's trying to understand, why does this moreh, why this teacher disagree with the simple reading of the Gemara? Why do you think that you can't use raisin wine? He writes, Udvarim Burim Heim, and these matters are clear. Eni yodeam b'men nafala safik, marah ha'osi losro. Where did the doubt come in, and why did this moreh, this teacher, what did he see to forbid the raisin wine? He said, maybe you like talat smoke, k'mosh k'zuf ha'rambam zah. Maybe he's holy like the Rambam. And the Rambam says, that yain simukim kachim alav, v'hu shiyat simukim shidroch osam yatsa mehem dvash. Rambam writes that the raisin wine is only good if it produces nectar. That wine from dry skins aren't valid. And he cites the Gaonim and the Rif also hold like this. V'chashav zeh oser kien kolat simukim shavim. And this teacher who forbade it thought that not all raisins are equal. V'tzimukim elin, the raisins here in Algiers, ein yotzim mehem devash. Nectar does not come from them. Hilkach ein mekachim al yain hanasa mehem. Therefore, you can't make kiddush and wine that's made from them. Vein okay, but he says it's not true. It's not true. He says that the Rambam is only coming to exclude wine that is so dried up that there's no moisture. But our raisins have moisture, and it should be okay to use for raisin wine. And then the Tashbitz goes on to say, he says, v'amina gam ken yochech. And the custom also will prove that I'm right. V'afilu ha'isa halacha rofefes. And even if the halacha is weak, ein l'shadot seminiko, don't change the custom. And he cites the Yerushalmi that says, im halacha rofefes hi biyodecha, if there's a halacha that's weak in your hand, rei heach hatzibur noheg, just see how the community is practicing. V'nahu kamosa, we should follow them. V'haya lo l'mora ze levato dato b'pnei hispashtus amidak. And this mora, this teacher, it's interesting, he doesn't call him a rabbi or chacham, he calls him a mora. This teacher should have surrendered his opinion because of these, how this custom is very widespread here in Algiers, that they're using raisin wine. And certainly that it's such a simple and obvious matter. And the Tashbis continues, maybe this is a mistake. Maybe he was mistaken because of sediments, that shmarim. Yain shel shmarim, the halacha is that, let's say you pour water, let's say you make wine from concentrate. So you have sediments, wine sediments, and then you pour water over it. And so does the result, is that considered wine? So the halacha is that if you pour 3 jugs of water over this wine sediment, and then after removing the sediments, the volume of the resulting beverage came to 4 jugs of wine, then it's considered wine. And that's enough of a ratio. And he said, maybe, and he says, then so maybe here, the raisins, maybe the with the raisins, the raisin wine, and essentially any wine that doesn't contain 3 parts of water to 1 part of pure wine is not regarded as wine. So maybe that's the case of the raisin wine. Maybe it doesn't produce that amount if you pour water over the raisins. But he says this is incorrect. You can't apply this to the raisin wine case because it says the Tashbish lo amru kach ella b'shimre yayin shekvar yatsa kol hayayin. Now this halacha about you need 3 parts, if you have 3 parts water and sediments and out comes 4 parts, that measure only applies to sediments, where all the wine left and all you have left is a little bit of moisture and you have this sediments. It doesn't involve yain simukim, but raisin wine. He says it's kosher for kiddush. It's the moisture is trapped inside the raisins. They're not dry. And moisture emerges from them, and so that's not a good proof. And then the key to this tshuva, is where he says, "Uma shehevi el hamora hazeh listapik bo." You know what brought this teacher to be doubtful of whether the raisin wine is kosher for kiddush? Because this wasn't the practice in Christian lands. Kimo Bartos, like in these lands. Ulufi Shinetku Meosud Makomas the Makomas Halalu. And since they were, people were uprooted from their places, from the Christian lands to these places in Algiers, which are under Muslim control. Huksha Beinav Lasus Masiv Meshalonogata. It was difficult for him to follow this practice that he was doing until now. Meaning what? Meaning, presumably, this Mora came from Spain. And this time it was run by the Christians were in charge of Spain. There, and in the Christian lands, everyone used wine that came from grapes, not wine that came from raisins. And now he comes to a new community, and he's thinking, even though it seems halacha, the minhag is to use raisin wine, and the halacha from the Gemara seems to be pretty straightforward, that you can use raisin wine. Still, that wasn't his practice. He wasn't lenient because it's not the way of the Christian land. This is what happens when you move from one community to another community, and you feel I don't want to, the practices that I followed in my old country, why aren't they being followed in the new country? And you get a little suspicious, and you think, even though I'll tell you, no, it's, I have a proof from the Gemara, it's fine. If I wasn't engaged in this practice in the old country, I don't want to do it in the new country. So what can we learn from this tshuva? And by the way, we could also find a date for this tshuva. He goes on and continuing with the tshuva, he talks about other possibilities, that maybe the raisin wine was mixed with honey, or maybe white wine, maybe the color is not the same. At the end of the day, he rejects all these different approaches. We also know the date of the response, even though it doesn't have the official date. He's, at the end of his tshuva, he says, he signs this as HaChosem Shimon Ben Harav Tzemach Hareini Kaparas Mishkavo. And he was saying that usually you say Hareini Kaparas Mishkavo with respect to a parent the first year after the parent's passing. So we know that the Tashbetz's father passed away in 1405. So this is probably when the tshuva was written. So it's about 14 years after the riots of 1391 began. Essentially, the Tashbetz takes the view that this authority was stuck in his mindset in Spain, but that's not the practice over here. The custom in North Africa is to use raisin wine. Maybe it's difficult to get wine from grapes in North Africa. And there's this Frummi who said, that's not what we did in Christian Spain. He wants to follow his mimetic tradition. He wants to follow what he did growing up. And he wants to continue that practice now in North Africa. And this is what happens with migration. Migration shakes things up and makes people critical of new practices. It doesn't feel right. And maybe that's why the Tashbetz wants to go through every possibility of what this teacher might be thinking to explain why he's wrong, why it is totally halakhically acceptable to have raisin wine and not necessarily grape wine. When we look at the Tashbetz's response about raisin wine, we see far more than a debate about Kiddush. We see a rabbi and a community rebuilding halakhic life after dislocation. Jews who had fled Christian Spain were trying to reroute themselves in North Africa, bringing their memories, habits, and uncertainties with them. Migration had shattered the taken-for-granted world of religious practice. Suddenly, old norms didn't fit the new reality. The Tashbetz models how halacha responds to rupture, not by freezing in the past, but by reinterpreting it through new eyes. He grounds his rulings in sources, in the Gemara, and also the Rishonim, and he also recognized Minhag HaMakom, the living practice of the community, as a halakhic force. In doing so, he restores both law and confidence to a shaken people. That the Chaim Soloveitchik described migration as a rupture that severs mimetic tradition, the instinctive feel for Jewish life passed down by imitation. The Tashbetz shows the other side of the story, how halacha itself becomes the bridge over rupture. Through responses like this, halakhic discourse helps a community reclaim continuity amid change, teaching that even when everything familiar has shifted, the Torah can still speak in the language of the new world. This case is just one example. Over the next number of sessions, we'll explore other major periods of rupture through migration in Jewish history, from the era of the Gaonim to modern diaspora, and trace how halacha has responded each time, shaping and reshaping the Jewish life in motion.